Rational discussion, common sense, open debate. RCR, Reality Check Radio with Paul Brennan.
Friday morning means our political panel here at RCR, so let's get into it. I want to welcome Helen Houghton, leader of the new Conservative Party. Ladies first, Helen. Hope you don't mind.
Good morning, Paul, and good morning to your audience. It's great to be back.
Okay, I'll try not to gaze.
Okay. No lipstick on this morning.
Oh, well, please, thank you for that. Otherwise, I'd have be locked into the screen no matter what's going on. All right. Also with us on the panel this morning, William McGimsey, public policy professional, political commentator, advocate for free speech and self-determination, and RCR contributor. Hi, William. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Paul. Hi, everyone. It's good to be here again.
I won't be looking at you.
Good.
Not with that moustache. And Glenn Inwood, New Zealand public relations specialist and better Wellington advocate now. Glenn, good morning.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing? Good to be here.
I'm not looking at you either. Okay, only no, Helen. No. Only Helen. Serious question, Helen. Is there something, just talking about what we were referring to before, the gaze, the male gaze, is it really that devastating? I mean, I can imagine creepy, leery, unwanted attention, but just a gaze? I mean, how are you supposed to engage these days?
Communication is all about eye contact. And, you know, if that eye contact goes a little bit further, well, you know, so be it. Why do we wear lipstick?
No, yeah. Well, I don't.
You know, I mean, yeah, there's a reason. We all like to look, well, most of us like to look okay.
The best that we can be in any circumstance, yeah. If we can do it, yeah.
Yeah, we all gaze. I mean, it's not only the male that has a gaze, and it's not that it's something that's not moral, but we all do it. We all look at what we find attractive, and that doesn't need to be a sexual thing at all. It could be just
aesthetic.
You know, you find beauty in things around the environment, and you, like, for example, I'll give you an example. I find beauty in the art form. I think it's an art form of bodybuilding. So when I look at a body, whether it's male or female, I have to add, now that'll cause some confusion out there, but you know, whether it's male or female, a body that has got a lot of muscle and is physique, you know, is an art form to me, and it's I will gaze at that. So make of that what you will.
I don't think you'd be gazing at me then, or William or Glenn. When was the last time you guys were at the gym?
I go to the gym regularly, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't tell from the neck up.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give you any greater things to look at, Paul.
No, good.
Worry.
No, we can't take that at this time in the morning. And Glenn, is there a female gaze? I reckon there is.
Well, you know, Paul, you've caught me off guard here, because this is the first I've sort of heard about this whole gaze thing.
But yeah.
I mean, you know, most people understand body language, right? And you know when somebody's just looking or has an interest, or somebody who's a bit leery and sizing you up and down. So,
you can always give, you know, the dirtiest look from hell back if you're not happy.
Exactly. You know, look at your face, you know.
Yeah. All right. Now, I'm glad we've got that out of the way. Let's get on to, where do we start? This whole week. Helen, ladies first again, the free world has been saved, has it? Just a small little question to start.
Wipe the beads of sweat off me still from, what day was it, Wednesday? Gosh.
Yeah,
that was,
it's all a blur.
That was edge of the seat stuff. Now, you know, but let's start with it then, and we'll go straight into it. The minority voters have rejected the DEI candidate.
Yeah, well, that's significant, right? That is significant.
It is, and I'll just read this brief statement. Harris and the Democratic Party have spent years dividing voters along racial and gender lines on the assumption that they own the votes of some people based on their skin colour or their being a woman. Those voters have rejected that assumption and done so while handing Harris and the Democratic Party a resounding defeat. That says it all. America has had enough already, and I believe, Paul, that this election they have rejected DEI politics.
So that's gone now, knocked.
Well, you'd think so. I mean, I was listening to J.D. Vance recently when he talked to some veterans. They were telling him that they signed up because they love their country and wanted to serve the whole of America. They didn't sign up to enforce one political idea. Mm. They had to enforce politics that had DEI training. The State Department were funding progressive politics in foreign countries even. I'll give you an example. There was a trans pride parade in the Czech Republic. The soldiers said that they want to deliver for America national interests, not serving Harris's radical agenda. So that's telling, you know, that says it all right there. So I think DEI is out the DEI door.
Okay. Glenn, from a political campaigning point of view, Trump's campaign and the Harris campaign, how would you contrast them? How would you describe them?
Well, first of all, I think Helen is absolutely correct. It was very much an election on those woke, liberal, progressive, Western values that have been pushed down people's throats and been used to divide people. And I think, in my view, the best quote I heard yesterday was actually from Ro Edge from Save Women's Sports Australia, where she said she hadn't seen a woman beaten quite so badly since the Paris Olympics. And I think that's very true as well. But look, I think the Democratic Party held an enormous propaganda campaign against Donald Trump, and it was instituted with the help of a massively biased and corrupt media base in the USA, which relentlessly amplified the message from the Democrats that Donald Trump was a fascist, Donald Trump was a Nazi, that he was a friend of Vladimir Putin, he was a friend of Kim Jong-un, he was a friend of Xi Jinping, even to the point of telling America, quote, Donald Trump is a threat to democracy and should be eliminated, unquote. That was Democrat Dan Goldman on MSNBC.
Wow.
Now, it's no wonder that two people tried to take pot shots at him. Because they are being pushed in that direction by the Democrat Party. And quite frankly, when I heard Kamala's speech yesterday, I thought she mentioned almost two dozen times the word fight. Roll your sleeves up, fight. It was as if she was calling for an insurrection. It sounded very much like that. And these are these are very deranged people in many ways.
William, we chatted for a online-only sort of a panel right after the result was known. Okay, we're a couple of days on from now. What have been your impressions of the last few days? Glenn mentioned, because it took Kamala a bit of time to say something, right? I mean, she didn't come out immediately or anything. And the way it's sort of playing out with the TikTokers going nuts, the montages of the meltdowns, all of that. So what are your impressions the last few days since we chatted last?
Yeah, well, the response has been similar, I think, to the 2016 election of Trump, but less pronounced. So in 2016, many people thought it would be impossible for Trump to win the election. It was just sort of an unthinkable thing. Because ever since he sort of came down the escalator in 2015, what he did is he started talking about topics that no one else talked about and that were thought off limits for talking about because they were xenophobic or racist or sexist and so on. So immigration is the obvious example. That issue, when he raised it, was almost off limits for discussion, and other political people almost refused to talk about it. But he sort of, and because of the way he talked, he said, you know, they're rapists, they're murderers, and some, I assume, are good people. He's just got a politically incorrect bent to the way he talks. And he's had the effect of opening up discussion. So I think he's been great for free speech, and he's been great in terms of moving the Overton window and allowing a lot of these sort of topics and policy ideas that were off limits due to woke censorship to be brought back into the mainstream and to come into the political debate. And over the period he's been involved in politics, 2016 to 2024 now, so this is almost a decade of Trump being a factor in American politics. He's contributed to a significant movement in the Overton window. The topics we're allowed to discuss, And he's moved the political debate on. Immigration went from being a taboo topic, for example, to being one of the major topics, perhaps the major topic in the entire election. So that'll be the lasting legacy of Trump, whether he implements any of his ideas or not. But I just wanted to second what Helen said, this idea about DEI. The election of Trump really is a rejection of wokeness. And it's just the mere fact that Americans would elect Trump sort of slaps down the idea that everything's going in this woke direction. So there's been this idea of the emerging Democratic majority made up of minority groups they import from various places around the world. And the idea was that those, as the demography of America changes, the electorate will inexorably lean more Democratic. But the way the results in this election have come out, Trump has actually won more Hispanics, for example. He's almost up to halfway in the Hispanics. He had the lead in Hispanic men. He won more of the black vote, still a low proportion, but more of the black vote than many people previously. And people have always been, there's always this thing about Texas going Democratic that they talk up every election, and it didn't. Actually, New York was closer to going Republican in this election than Texas was to going Democratic. So I think there's a real issue for the Democrats to think over there, whether this idea of the emerging Democratic majority is really accurate and is really going to deliver them the power they want long term.
Yeah,
New Jersey as well was heading that direction as a Republican state, and it didn't quite do it, but it was closer in points than ever before as well. So this was a real change for the USA. And despite 4 years of the Democratic Party with open borders and allowing people from the South to come across uncontrolled and trying to change the demographic of the US, it just didn't work. The Hispanics were voting for Trump a lot more than previously. And white women. And you know, you see the usual stuff on what is that, The View on
not The View.
MSNBC going off that white women who were clearly apparently not educated voting for Trump.
So they're turning on themselves now. I like to try and explain it. It's funny to watch, isn't it?
Yeah. Add to that too, I think it might have been The View or somewhere else where they had the black guy saying that some men now, some black men apparently are misogynistic as well. So that's why Trump appealed to them. So the talk about going in on themselves, they're not just using the woman because the woman have voted for Trump, but they're also saying that this is why some of those black votes have gone to him as well, because they are now misogynistic, which is kind of different than what I thought the old white man, you know.
Yeah, at least we're not alone anymore. We've got more in the group.
Yeah, there you go, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's one of the issues with trying to hold together a consensus based on this alliance of the fringes, alliance of these minority groups. In the absence of sort of like a group that they can be in opposition to, they don't actually have a lot in common. And so you're seeing, like Helen says,
right, they go at each other.
Yeah, well, Trump's misogyny appeals to the black people. I saw a CNN panel, it might be the same one you saw, Helen, where they were lamenting the misogyny of the blacks and Latinos within the Democratic consensus, and how Trump's so-called misogyny appealed to them. So there's this idea of this alliance of the minorities might actually destroy itself once it realizes it doesn't have that a whole lot in common with each other.
It's interesting, this word misogyny coming up like it has, and it's been repeated. Naomi Wolf was on here a few weeks ago, and she said, I asked her about, who would decide this election, what group of voters. She said white young women. And so you just touched on that. Obviously, not as many as the Democrats thought. But also, if you look at the voting figures, men, mostly men voted for Donald Trump, unless I'm missing something. So
no, you're not. And young men as well. So Gen Z was a very big voter towards Donald Trump. Gen Z and Gen X, supposedly. The numbers there were very high for Trump.
He also does well with people who don't go to university, who don't go to college.
Well, that's me.
So a lot of the Democrats,
and Dave,
the strategists, they sort of sneeringly say, well, that's because, the bigoted, uneducated people are more likely to vote for him. But when, you know, I've been to university and there's a lot of sort of left-wing indoctrination that goes on there. So it's probably not too surprising that the people who have gone through the woke indoctrination are less likely to vote for the anti-woke candidate.
Glenn, I want to ask you a question. I'm curious, given your connections, et cetera, does this this win by Trump, does this grant any permission, like back here, to push back harder against DEI, to think of freedom of speech more seriously, you know, at a wider scale than just, you know, us that get exercised about it? Is it a line in the sand for more than just the US, I guess is my question.
I do. I think it's a global. I think globally that can happen, especially in those Western liberal nations that have been held to ransom by climate change ideology, by trans ideology, by DEI stuff as well. All of that, all of those issues. I think back here, yes, indeed. You know, before Trump was elected in 2016. You know, David Seymour sent out tweets that, you know, Trump was racist very highly critical of him, even Christopher Luxon was sending out tweets that Trump was against Christianity and all this sort of stuff. You know, but they're going to have to work with them, and it could help a lot of that movement. If I had to sort of sum up this election, though, I would say it is the working class against the chattering classes. It's the working class against the elites. And everyday Americans against dipshit celebrities who think they can swing the election by making some vague, nebulous, boring statement about Kamala Harris or whatever. It's the nationalists against the globalists. And the globalists lost. And it's all very, very well to say, oh, no, it was all about the economy, which is what the media are doing, which is what the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times are reporting. It's all about the economy, stupid, to quote Slick Willie. But there was that disconnect from Democrats telling the American people that the economy is strong and in great shape, while middle America is paying more for gas, more for food, harder to make a living, and they just don't believe the economy is working anymore the way that they know it. I mean, you know, that's the easy explanation. I mean, it was definitely more than that. It was about uncontrolled immigration. It was about democracy. It was about the First Amendment. It was about freedom of expression. Why else would Elon Musk be backing Trump? It was about the pushback against those woke progressive liberal policies. And it was about the rejection of the climate change ideology that's wrought in the global economy. It was about lots of things this election. That's why it was one of the most important elections around. I mean, why else would you get a Kennedy, which is political royalty in the Democrats, in the Democratic Party, leave the Democrats and support Trump? Robert Kennedy, doing that, he lost half of his family. Many of them won't talk to him anymore. And that's just the nature of how America is at the moment.
Yeah, speaking of Kennedy, I saw a clip from him, I think yesterday, where he was saying that Trump had given him 2 years and he wanted to see an appreciable or measurable result in the health, fundamental health of Americans in 2 years. So things are going to happen really fast, aren't they,
very
William?
Fast.
Yeah, well, I mean, 2 years isn't very long, is it? So he's going to have to sort of get to work very quickly to do that. You would think that a lot of the measures you would need to take, you know, around changing the people's dietary habits and maybe some of the changing the way sort of various vaccines or healthcare products are used, changing some of the stuff that's going into the food supply.
Well, abolishing the PrEP Act might achieve something within 2 years, because then liability is faced by the pharmaceutical companies. And in that situation, they just pull everything off the market. The vaccine schedule's gone. And that's a health improvement right there and then. That's what I was thinking anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing he's been asked to do is sort of revamp the agencies, so to get them to bring back their reputation for, you know, being based on very strong empirical science rather than being sort of captured by special interests. And there's a lot of people in there, he says, you know, that have conflicts of interest. They've worked for the pharmaceutical companies. Now they work in the government. There's sort of a revolving door between lobbyists and regulators, which is very dangerous. The regulators are supposed to be putting the rules in place for the pharmaceutical companies and these other companies they're regulating. And you've got people who have very cozy relationships one with another, that can be problematic.
Well, one thing we know for sure, he knows a lot about Fauci because he wrote a book about him. So watch that space. To the border, Helen, I'll get everybody's call on this, but start with you, Helen. The fact that the border was never closed, let's say, all the way through right up to that election, despite the gaslighting from Democrats saying anything that's being managed, nothing too bad. That proved, didn't it, that they were planning on diluting voting bases, changing the voting patterns to favour them. That's sort of nakedly obvious now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And that's, you know, considering that is one of the biggest reasons that even American immigrants now that, you know, may not have favoured Trump at all or liked him did the switch and actually voted for him because of that whole mass immigration, you know, the open borders where you've just got a free-for-all. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about the immigration later on, which I'll add some of the statements in by some immigrants about what their thoughts around that are. I just have to find where I'm at the moment, if you're going to go there.
No worries.
But look, I just wanted to, just before we did move on, I wanted to just agree. I don't want to repeat what Glenn has said, but talking about it being the most important election, you know, that monumental win is also a triumph over things like, you know, common sense over leftist insanity, the common people over the globalist elite, freedom over big government socialism, truth over the lying mainstream media, policy over progressive propaganda, and justice over establishment corruption. So you've got Trump who, you know, is a candidate who seeks to build up America and the world over a candidate who, I think, you know, you were talking about it before, she projected hate, talking about Nazis and garbage, and yet Trump was actually, hope. I mean, she was hell-bent on destroying Canada, really, with all of the, the leftist stuff, preying on, I mean, that leftist agenda preys on our children. It takes away property. Mm. It takes away their rights and their freedoms. There's murdering, transing, and otherwise, you know, destroying the culture, encouraging every kind of predator in. And that's what the open borders does as well. But, yeah, just without kind of going on about that, it is a huge triumph. And that, I think, will impact New Zealand hugely as well, because a world around, we're all talking about this leftist insanity.
Sounds to me, Helen, like you're kind of saying it was a good versus evil.
Yeah, like it is good over evil. I mean, those who believe the government's job is to protect the people, that's what government is for, but yet that hasn't been happening. You know, I mean, you've got, I watched something recently, I can't remember her name, but there was a couple of those criminals that got into the illegal immigrants. They raped and murdered a 12-year-old girl. You know, it's just appalling what's going on over there. And that happened on Harris's watch. Mm.
The interesting thing, though, folks, is that there was never a move to stop it, was there? When that maybe could have made a huge difference to the Democrats' campaign. Glenn, do you reckon?
Well, Texas made a move to stop the immigration, didn't they? They were putting up more barbed wire and more fences, and the Democrats apparently didn't like that and wanted them to take it down, if I read that rightly.
They were bussing some of the migrants into New York and other places.
Don't they
well.
Fly them around the place as well? In the middle
well,
of the
that,
night?
Yeah, that's the government. Yeah, that's sort of, it's really sinister.
You know, the absolute madness about this election campaign is that, for example, California didn't even require people to have ID and before they voted. And I saw on Twitter people saying, oh, I'm from Germany, I'm in the US on holiday, so I thought I'd vote for Trump.
There is the polling. Yeah.
Well, they pointed out, I think Elon Musk was saying on Twitter that the states that Kamala won were the states without voter ID. And Trump won all the ones that did have voter ID. So that's a big deal, isn't it? And one of the reasons, even if the illegal immigrants don't actually vote, they change the shape of the congressional districts and the apportionment of votes in the area. So even their presence, if they don't vote, can swing things in the Democrats' direction. So it's a really important issue to get your head around. They affect the election even if they don't vote. Of course, so some of them may be voting. It opens up opportunities for voter fraud, especially when you've got the mail-in voting, where they can just sort of round up votes and deliver boxes in the middle of the night into into polling places where they might be a little bit behind. So there's just... But the other side of the coin is the fact that they allowed this immigration to go on, I think, motivated and encouraged many Republican voters to come out and vote against it. So it had this sort of dual effect of motivating the Republicans while sort of biasing the election in Democrats' favour in other ways.
It could have happened, though, if the Democrats had won, if Kamala had won, then there would have been a huge amnesty declared to all of those folk, and then they are in the system with only one group to thank for being there.
Yeah, well, it's a case where all the political incentives, you really need some sort of system to prevent that, because it's rorting the election, isn't it? It's rigging the election via immigration policy. So the political incentives encourage Democrats to import new voters that are more likely to vote for them. But that's a betrayal of the interests of your current American citizen. So there really needs to be some sort of constitutional protections in place and enforced that prevent that type of behaviour from happening.
Do you think global policy or outlook for American voters was a factor here? Because I've heard many, very grumpy about, especially after the hurricane, 750 in the hand when, off to Ukraine and other areas, billions and billions and billions down the black hole of the military-industrial complex. Do you think that was in the thinking of voters as well? Because it wasn't so much reported, but I wonder.
Well, if I was in North Carolina and my house had just been blown away by a hurricane, and I heard the government was giving billions of dollars away to Ukraine, but it was preventing people from coming in helicopters to rescue me or my fellow North Carolinians, I'd be very upset about that. That would motivate me to vote for the other party. So I wonder... I think that probably must have had some sort of effect.
And endless wars, that came up a lot, that term, endless wars.
Yes. In my opinion, Paul, I think the biggest test is going to come early on for Trump, and that is after the swearing-in ceremony on January the 20th on what he's going to do about Ukraine and whether or not he will stop the funding going towards the American industrial complex, military complex, which is sending more and more weapons into the Ukraine. And he said on many occasions he will stop that war. Let's see how well he does there. Let's see, the only way he can stop that is by pushing back against the war hawks and the neocons in Washington, D.C., who have the Democratic Party under the thumb. And as soon as America stops putting money into it, then I think you will see a move towards peace negotiations sooner rather than later. Having said that, who knows how this will go? But I think he will have to be held to account on his campaigning on Ukraine and saying he can stop that war.
Well, what he said is that he will negotiate an end to the Ukraine war before he even takes office while he's in the
presidency. Well, we shall see.
So that's very ambitious. The real battle there is in order to really negotiate a settlement, he's probably going to have to give some concessions in terms of land to Russia.
Well, they'll get the Donbass almost for sure, won't they?
Well, I think that'll probably what it will have to be. But whether he can make a deal that's appealing to NATO and the European allies and even the people back home he's got to talk to, that will be the thing, the hard negotiating point, I think.
Helen, anything to say on this particular point?
No, I just agree basically with what's already been said. He's, I think that... That's one area that has been covered quite well.
Mm. Okay. What'll be interesting is if, with Elon Musk taking part, he's going to have some role in this government, at least according to the discussions. What that is, who knows. But If Trump wants to stop the Ukraine war, it'd be interesting what Trump does, because most of those Ukrainians on the battlefield are using Musk's Starlink to communicate with each other. So maybe he'll just turn all them off.
Yeah, well, he could just do that, I suppose. He'd just make a phone call, wouldn't he?
Yeah, like turning off a Tesla.
Disabling it on the motorway while you're driving it. The surrogates for the Trump campaign, you mentioned Elon Musk. Rogan became one right at the end. Tulsi Gabbard.
The inimitable Tucker Carlson.
Tucker, exactly. RFK Jr. Heavy hitters, man.
Absolutely. Mm. Dream team, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess you could say. So some thoughts on those.
Sorry, you got them versus the likes of, what was the other one, Oprah Winfrey or Lady Gaga. I mean, you know, where's your vote going to go?
Oh, I don't know. It's a tough one.
Trump had Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Well, he was there for a while too, wasn't he? He was ripping his shirt off for Trump, wasn't he?
Yeah.
One of the things that this sort of signifies is a changing in the guard in terms of who the people with the biggest influences are. And this is easiest to see in terms of Joe Rogan, right? So there's a point I've made elsewhere, but people in the past have competed for the endorsements of big newspapers, because those are the organizations that have had the sway in terms of being able to influence people's opinion. But in this election, Trump was gunning for the endorsement of Joe Rogan, which he eventually got with Elon Musk's help. So it just shows you how much the sort of the media ecosystem has changed and who the influential players are. It's moved away from the big newspapers, from the big TV networks, and towards a lot of these independent podcasters, because Rogan's audience is bigger than a lot of these mainstream media organizations.
How long did he go? I think he was almost 3 hours on Rogan, wasn't he?
Yep.
And
yeah, those are marathon sessions. So Trump did 3 years, Vance did 3 years, Elon Musk did 3 years, and he was on there several times. So like these are big things to go on.
I know why they're so popular, and that is because you get to be able to judge the character far more accurately than just sound bites. It's obvious. In fact, sound bites can be used to disguise the character. If you can't get through even the first 20 minutes without sounding authentic, you're done. You're done. That's how that works. Am I right?
Yeah,
well, William.
I was just going to say, you know, it's a lot of sound bites if you're going to memorize 3 hours worth of sound bites. I can't memorize 1 hour worth of sound bites to get through these political panels. So I think I'm a piece.
Yeah. So it does reveal the character. I think people naturally, they know that. They naturally understand that. And
no, you make a very good point, Paul, especially when the Kamala Harris interview, I don't know what, I forget what it was on. Was it on ABC or NBC?
The edited one, clearly, CBS, yeah.
CBS, and they'd clearly cut it to take out all the gobbledygook nebulous stuff that Kamala's known to say. And made the interview look better. And even, I think, Trump's campaign sued them for that. I mean, look, I don't have a problem with it. It happens all the time, right? But you're quite right. Those long-form interviews are the way to go. They you can judge a person and what they say and how they can perform by those long-form interviews. They're very good for it. And we did one with Peter Williams and Winston
during I remember that
campaign, and that went very well, and that was one of the most watched videos for the New Zealand election campaign.
Really,
and just saying that,
I didn't know that.
Winston, I thought he did very well yesterday in Parliament, saying that the New Zealand government will work with the administration. It's got good people to work with the administration, and yet you've got the Greens on the other hand pushing that, you know, we shouldn't be supporting Trump. We shouldn't be, you know, New Zealand, as if we've got a say in this.
Well, how do we support him anyway? I mean, we just got to get That's on right. with them. We've got no choice, right?
No, exactly. As if we can change it. It's like, how can the Greens wanting to stop the war in Israel? Well, look, that's their issue to deal with, right?
You just imagine the news flash on American network TV. Hold it. We have to re-elect. We have to do it all again. The New Zealand Green Party's not happy. Yeah, right.
Everything they touch turns to dust, and you can just see that when you drive down a Wellington street.
Yeah.
There are a few implications for New Zealand out of this election, and one of the biggest ones that we've sort of had some coverage on already in the media is around the tariffs. So Trump has outlined this, what he's called a new American industrialism, where he's going to implement 20% tariffs and reduce the corporate tax rate in America to 15%. And the idea there is he wants to say to big businesses, if you come and you set up in America and you employ American workers, we're going to give you a really low tax economic environment. We're going to cut regulations and environmental regulations for you, give you a really friendly business environment, and you get access to our market. But in return, you have to set up here and hire American workers. So that's basically the strategy, and that's to counter Chinese influence and to counter the offshoring of the American manufacturing base to China and elsewhere. But the question for New Zealand is whether those tariffs are going to apply to us. And there's been some debate about whether they will or not. So the American ambassador to New Zealand, Scott Brown, has come out and said, no, these tariffs are targeted at China. And Winston and has come out on the news and said, well, we're going to be talking very closely to the transition team to figure out whether that's the case or not. So there's a bit of work to go in there from Winston and MFAT to see whether what the deal is with these tariffs, whether they're going to be applying to New Zealand or not. Because
there are going to be some issues with dairy. There's going to be some issues with cheese. There are going to be some issues with beef. But there always has been. America has always been a protectionist market. And we have been making some pretty good inroads, I think, into it. But it'll be a difficult, challenging task to move forward, because Trump very much is more of a, you know, seen as a protectionist type of leader. Yeah.
I got a question for you, Glenn, given your kind of historical knowledge of New Zealand first. It seems to me the closest political entity in New Zealand to the Trump factor, or whatever you want to call it, is New Zealand First, actually. Nationalistic, common sense, all those things which people voted for, it seems, in the United States, and the economy. They're going big on that. Is this a great opportunity for New Zealand First to kind of leverage off what is obviously a direction that's been put in front of us from the United States? Any thoughts on that?
I think you'd probably find that people who are supporting in New Zealand, who have a view on supporting Republicans and the Trump campaign, would probably be leaning more towards New Zealand First anyway, because I do think the values on those two parties align. If you have a look at 2020, the pathway that both Donald Trump and the Republicans took is very similar to New Zealand First. Voted out of Parliament, voted out of the presidency in the US, and coming back stronger, both entities coming back stronger. And that happened to New Zealand First in 2023.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And the same with Trump, as you've seen now. So, I would suspect that there is going to be a rise in conservative politics throughout the world. And I think we are seeing a global pushback against the woke ideologies and that the left and the Greens and the climate change people have all been pushing on us. And I think the world is realizing, look, the green climate change ideology is about no growth. No growth is about no productivity and no energy, and no energy and no productivity is about poverty. And that's the only way that climate change ideology will lead New Zealand in. That's clearly the way it's going. And I think there's going to be a massive pushback against that.
Has anyone got anything to say, just thinking, as you're talking there, of the latest Green MP to be sworn in, what he was wearing?
It's a lovely skirt.
I mean, we've got to have some...
He looks good in a skirt, doesn't he?
you can say that. But we've got to have some kind of standard, don't we? I know it sounds boring, but...
What was with the books? He was carrying books.
I don't know.
Maybe he's just very studious and highly intellectual, or at least wants to let us think that.
Or to his base, that's what they like to see. Oh, he's got some books. He must be smart.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to gaze at his attire, Paul. Was it an attractive dress?
It looked like he'd just come across the desert or something to me, first glance.
Okay.
Obviously he hadn't. But it's fair enough to have conservative dress standards for somewhere like Parliament in the the chamber, isn't it? Or am I just old-fashioned now? I don't know.
Well, you've got Rawhiti wearing his hat.
Yeah.
And as Winston said, half the greenstone of South Island around their neck.
Weighing them down. It looks like Rawhiti's come off the High Chaparral or something.
Paul, I think wanting tradition is not old-fashioned. There's a real stability and structure around tradition and all those values. If we just, you know, carry on with the conversation about Glenn talking about conservative, I mean, conservative policies emphasise all of the things that the American people are looking for right now. They're looking for that stability. They had concerns about national security. Conservative policies emphasise law and order, border security, social stability, you know, which clearly has appealed to them. And not only America, all nations right now are feeling the impact of that economic instability, rising crime rates, and, you know, conservative governments offer that reassurance that the government will protect their citizens and maintain that predictable social structure, which you call traditional. It's certainly not old-fashioned. Stability, security, and tradition values, you know, feel reassuring amid uncertainty, and there's uncertainty worldwide. You know, I'm sure we're going to touch more on economy, but in times of financial uncertainty, which we're all dealing with, conservative economic policy, such as reducing the debt, cutting government spending, appeals to the majority of people.
Well, that's what Trump said. We're going to cut the debt. Yeah, it's one of his big...
Exactly. Conservative, look, and, you know, community and family-orientated values. Conservative policies place high value on that community and family structure, and that also provides real reliability support systems in these difficult times, which people are living in, you know, complex and changing environments. I believe the people are turning to these traditional structures, Paul, as their sources of stability and continuity. So I think we're going to see a lot more people being attracted to the conservative policies, like Glenn said. You know, and let's not forget, there's also the rapid social progressive change there. You heard the American people have rejected woke ideas in these volatile times. You know, having rapid social changes only adds to feelings of uncertainty. Again, conservative approaches are more careful and considered. Mm. So, yeah, who wants experimental and ideology running the governments?
All right, we're coming up against time, so probably need to get to the last few comments. William, starting with you, how will history record this moment, do you think?
Well, there's a movement around the world of which Trump is a part of. And I think it's sort of debatable about what's causing this, but one of the things is a change in the media environment. So for a long time, the progressive left have used their dominance of media to sort of move the political opinions of the electorate in the directions that they've liked. And with the evolution, the creation of social media, and more people getting their news off social media, we're seeing a movement back in the other direction. Ordinary people with conservative views are now able to put their views out there. Other people are able to read those views, and it's sort of democratizing the media landscape, and meaning that ordinary people with ordinary sort of conservative values now have media speaking for them. And that's creating these populist movements, these populist anti-establishment movements all around the Western world, where you have ordinary people with ordinary conservative values that have been sort of demonized as, you know, irrational bigotries, saying, well, hold on, that's not fair. It's not fair that our views and our preferences are being demonized and delegitimized and shut out of the power structure as irrational bigotries. This is a democracy. We're allowed to have our preferences implemented into law and into government policy. So Trump is the American part of that global change, that global sea change in public opinion, back towards what ordinary people want and away from elite opinion. And it's a big battle. It's a big cultural battle that he's had to fight. He's been, you know, he's demonized all the institutional powers against him, all the media's against him. He's been impeached twice. He's been had two assassination attempts against him. But he only grew stronger out of that, and he managed to win in the end. So I think this is a harbinger of a change, a global or at least Western, a change across the Western world in types of political opinions are considered mainstream.
Glenn, quick comment from you.
What I think the world is heading into is a questioning of the value of globalism, and we'll see countries retreat more into their own sovereign view, which I have no issue with myself. And I think we will be seeing more protectionist policies come into play with trade and that sort of thing, which will affect New Zealand. Look, New Zealand, I've always seen that we have a bit of an inferiority complex as Kiwis.
No kidding.
And we believe that in order to stamp our place in the world, we need to be leaders in things like global climate change and all of that. And in the meantime, we're wrecking our economy while Russia, India, China and the US are steaming on ahead and not worrying about it. And this is really only due, as I said, due to what I see as a national inferiority complex, as we're 5 million people at the bottom of the world. Yeah. And we need to change that and look after our own interests, our own national interests, for our own benefit and wealth creation.
Helen, quick final comment from you, please.
Yep. Proves once again that it's possible to win an election without becoming weak, woke and worthless, and without promising to continue whatever crazy policies your enemies introduce. So I wish our leaders would take notice. God willing, Trump and the Republicans will go on to show us how to lead. When you're given a mandate to fix things, you go ahead and do it.
All right.
Trump will do that. Thanks.
Helen Halton, Glenn Inwood, William McGimsey, thanks for coming on our post-US election political special. It's a special panel. Thanks for coming on the panel, guys, and have a great weekend, all right?
Thanks.
You too.
RCR is on a mission to revive honest media. It's a good mission, and now you can be an integral part of it by joining the RCR Foundation Members Club. Receive exclusive benefits only available to club members, including discounted merch, your backstage pass to join the host for interactive behind-the-scenes discussions, and the popular daily curated news summary, RCR Bytes. Delivered to your email inbox every weekday morning, keeping you on the pulse of the news that matters in just a few minutes per day. To find out more, check out www.realitycheck.radio/members or click the FMC button on the bottom right of your RCR app.